Dr. William Luther Pierce, 2001. Demonstrating for Freedom.
Hello. 2 weeks ago, my organization, the National Alliance, held a small, peaceful demonstration at the German Embassy in Washington. On Sunday, July 29th, we had about 70 men and women carrying signs in front of the embassy protesting the lack of civil liberties for dissidents in Germany. We were protesting the fact that the German government puts its citizens in prison for saying or writing anything deemed politically incorrect. In Germany, people are locked up even for listening to politically incorrect music, or for having politically incorrect ideas about what really happened during the Second World War. People are in prison in Germany now for having questioned some detail of the official Holocaust story, for example, or for singing forbidden songs, or for being caught at an underground concert where forbidden music was being played. There is no freedom of speech in Germany. No freedom of association, no intellectual or artistic freedom. And we want everyone to know this. We want to embarrass the German government. And we want the American people to know about this lack of freedom in Germany and about the repression of political, intellectual, and artistic dissidents. Most Americans haven't the faintest idea about these things. Americans are taught in school and by the media, especially by Hollywood, that in the Second World War the Americans fought the Nazis to free the German people and the rest of Europe from the tyranny imposed by Hitler. Americans are taught that under Hitler the Germans had no freedom. They are taught that the first thing Hitler did when he became Chancellor of Germany in 1933 was confiscate all of the privately owned firearms in Germany. Then he burned all of the books he didn't like. After that, Americans have been told in countless Hollywood films, he had anyone who criticized him or his government arrested and thrown into a concentration camp. Americans have been taught that anyone who refused to give the Roman salute or to say Heil Hitler on appropriate occasions was in danger of being shot by the Gestapo. And we are taught that the Americans smashed the wicked Nazi government in order to restore freedom to Germany. We are taught that we gave back to the Germans freedom of speech and freedom of the press and freedom of association, that we gave them back political and intellectual and artistic freedom, and that the Germans were very grateful to us for this. We are taught that we liberated the Germans. And to drive the lesson home, we are shown photographs and old newsreel clips of American GIs handing out candy bars to grateful German children. We are shown photographs of American soldiers opening the gates of concentration camps and freeing all of the wrongfully imprisoned dissidents, many of them badly malnourished. Most Americans don't understand that nearly all of this is a calculated lie. They don't understand that Hollywood concocted this lie, and the U.S. government and the American educational establishment went along with it in order to deceive the American people about the true reasons for the American bombing and invasion of Germany, and about what actually happened in Germany before, during, and after the war. Indeed, some GIs did give candy bars to German children. But nearly everything else we have been taught about Germany and the Second World War is a lie. Most Americans don't understand that Hitler didn't confiscate privately owned firearms after he became chancellor. In fact, he encouraged the private ownership of firearms by Germans. It was the U.S. government that outlawed the private ownership of firearms in Germany and then confiscated all civilian weapons from the German people in 1945. After Germany's surrender, the U.S. Army posted proclamations requiring all German civilians to turn in their handguns, their hunting rifles and shotguns, even their fencing swords at Army collection stations. And American GIs were amazed at the enormous number of privately owned weapons turned in by the Germans. Everything from modern sporting rifles and pocket pistols intended for self-defense to antique firearms and swords which were family heirlooms. The Americans permitted no German civilian to keep any weapon with which he might defend himself or his family. Hitler didn't take away the Germans' right to keep and bear arms. The U.S. government did. Americans don't understand that Hitler did not make it illegal for Germans to own books critical of him or his government. Americans have been shown pictures of Germans throwing books on bonfires, and they have been told that these were books confiscated from Germans, that the Nazis were basically book burners who consigned to the flames anything they didn't agree with. What they have not been told is that the bonfires were only symbolic, that the books burned were communist literature, pornographic materials, and other books the Hitler government viewed as degenerate and harmful to public morality. Germans could still own or read such books if they wanted, but the Nazis were making a public demonstration of their opposition to communism, to pornography, to Jewish fashions, to degenerate modern art, and the like. Their symbolic bonfires served much the same purpose as public bonfires which have been organized in America by Christian church groups to burn records, tapes, and CDs of music with what the church groups consider immoral lyrics. Christian leaders understand that they cannot stop people from owning or listening to such music, but they want to send a graphic message of their disapproval. Such bonfires, whether in Germany or America, have propaganda value, but they do not have legal significance. Americans don't understand that Germans were not thrown into concentration camps for not saying Heil Hitler or for not joining the Nazi Party. Indeed, there were certain limits. The Communist Party was banned by Hitler, and if someone were caught trying to recruit communists for underground work, he very likely would wind up in a concentration camp. If homosexuals were seen fondling each other in public in Berlin the way they do in San Francisco today, they probably would be sent to a concentration camp. If a child molester or a pimp were arrested in Germany, he might be sent to a concentration camp. He might even have his head cut off. There were some things the Nazis simply wouldn't put up with. They were quite determined to clean up German life and to set new fashions and new standards for public behavior after a long period during which the Jews had been permitted to promote every sort of degeneracy in Germany. But the fact remains that despite the restrictions on communists and homosexuals and Jews, Germans had more intellectual and artistic freedom, more freedom of speech under Hitler than they did after Germany's so-called liberation in 1945. And under Hitler, they had more freedom of expression than they do today. But if you say that in Germany today, you'll be arrested and sent to prison for it. In the National Alliance, we believe that Americans ought to understand that. It was not just for German freedom that we were demonstrating 2 weeks ago. It was for American freedom as well. The unfortunate fact is that our government in Washington agrees with the German government's repression of dissidents in Germany. The Bush government would like very much to be able to imprison its critics in America the way the German government imprisons its dissidents. On the very day before our demonstration, Mr. Bush's government forcibly sent a young German musician, Hendrik Mewes, back to Germany so that he can be imprisoned for politically incorrect statements he made there before fleeing to this country and seeking political asylum here. Our Immigration and Nationality Act specifically says that asylum is available to, and here I quote from the Act itself, is available to any person who is outside any country of such person's nationality and who is unable or unwilling to return to and is unable or unwilling to avail himself or herself of the protection of that country because of persecution or well-founded fear of persecution on account of race, religion, nationality, membership in a particular social group, or political opinion. End of quote. That's what the U.S. law says. And it seems clear enough that, having been convicted twice in absentia by German courts while he was seeking asylum here for things he had said in Germany before fleeing, Hendrik had a well-founded fear of persecution on account of his political opinion. And so from the beginning, the National Alliance supported Hendrik's struggle for freedom. We hired attorneys for him and paid all of his expenses in the effort to win political asylum for him. In the final ruling against Hendrik, before they turned him over to the German government to be locked up, the U.S. Board of Immigration Appeals said that they found that the German government had a right to enforce its laws intended to, and here I quote directly from the ruling, intended to discourage the political activities of groups seen as sympathetic to or supportive of extremely nationalistic or Nazi-like causes, end of quote. Well, I'm no lawyer, but it seems to me that being convicted and sentenced to prison for making statements seen by the German government as, quote, sympathetic to or supportive of extremely nationalistic or Nazi-like causes amounts to, quote, persecution on account of political opinion. You know, I have a strong suspicion that if Hendrik were Chinese instead of German, and the Chinese government wanted to lock him up for having said things it didn't like, the U.S. Board of Immigration Appeals would have viewed his petition for asylum differently. I suspect that would be the case because opposition by a Chinaman to the Chinese government is not seen as a threat by a certain very powerful minority group in the United States, whereas opposition by a German to the German government that the U.S. Army installed after the war to keep the German people under control very definitely is seen as a threat. Of course, the principal lie about Germany that is propagated by the media and the schools and the government here isn't the lie that Germany is a free country today. It is the lie that, for no reason at all, Hitler killed 6 million innocent, inoffensive, blameless Jews in gas chambers during the war. This is the so-called Holocaust story that Germans are not permitted to investigate or question. They are required to swallow it whole under penalty of law and to do penance by supporting Israel. To be sure, Hitler did kill Jews. That was a necessary concomitant of restoring Germany to health. When communists were rounded up and thrown into concentration camps in Germany before the war, a large number of them were Jews. And during the fight against the Soviet Union, groups of Jews were rounded up and put into concentration camps in the East because nearly all of them were partisans of the communists. When the Germans failed to round them up, the local citizens in Poland and Ukraine and the Baltic states often rounded them up themselves and killed them because the Jews had collaborated with the Soviets in persecuting the non-Jewish citizens of these countries. There's a big ruckus in the Jewish media at the moment about the Poles taking revenge against the Jews of the town of Jedwabne in 1941 after the Germans drove out the Reds. I really don't know how many Jews the Germans killed, but it certainly was less than the number of German civilians and prisoners of war killed by or at the instigation of the Jews after after the war. The Americans collaborated in this genocidal campaign against the Germans, allowing gangs of armed, murderous Jews in U.S. Army uniforms to run wild through conquered Germany, raping, looting, and killing. German prisoners of war were starved to death on a massive scale after they had surrendered. Many were poisoned by being fed bread laced with arsenic. And the Americans, who supposedly had been fighting to liberate the Germans, turned the whole eastern half of Germany over to the communists at the end of the war. Some liberation. It's no wonder that American GIs began using the term so cynically. To liberate came to mean to steal, to loot, to despoil, to plunder and pillage. Anyway, the Germans lost their freedom in 1945, and they still haven't regained it. The Jews who control our news and entertainment media think that's a good thing, and therefore, of course, our government does too. The National Alliance was protesting against the lack of freedom in Germany and also against the attitude of the media and the government in this country that the Germans shouldn't have freedom, nor should Americans who refuse to follow the Jewish party line. So as soon as the National Alliance people began arriving at the German embassy, they were attacked by a shrieking gaggle of the chosen ones who had been bussed in from New York for the purpose. The Jews, representing such groups as the International Socialist Organization, the World Workers' Party, something called Anti-Racist Action, and a coven of militant lesbians, began spitting and swinging weapons. Most of the Jews were masked. That is, they were wearing ski masks or bandanas tied across their faces. The District of Columbia has an anti-mask law enacted back during the 1920s as an anti-Klan measure. But the police seemed to believe that the law doesn't apply to Jews or communists because no one was arrested for concealing his face behind a mask or a bandana. The enemy's weapons were things they could claim weren't really weapons, but that nevertheless could do substantial damage. One of them was swinging a skateboard, and another was using a heavy lug wrench when they attacked Billy Roper from my office, who was leading our group of demonstrators. I wasn't there myself, but I have studied the videotape from a news camera, and one can clearly see these Jewish champions of international brotherhood trying to kill Billy with a heavy skateboard and a lug wrench. They put a nasty gash over his right eye before our people grabbed them and held them for the police. Our people, of course, in obedience to the law, all were unarmed, neatly dressed, and prepared for a peaceful demonstration. But since we had as many people as the Jews had, the odds weren't to their liking, and they didn't stick around long. We marched in front of the embassy for 2 hours, primarily for the benefit of the news media, so that our message would reach the American people as well as the German government. A one Washington television station, Channel 9, carried a reasonably good report of the demonstration and of the Jewish effort to stop it. The Washington Post and most of the other media gave minimal coverage. So, our member, Billy Roper, a high school history teacher from Arkansas, got a gash over his eye and some bruises. The National Alliance is $20,000 in the hole for legal expenses trying to win asylum for Hendrick. And Hendrick is in a German prison where he must spend the next 5 years of his life for having said some things that the chosen people who control both Germany and the United States didn't like. And the American people, like most of the German people, continue watching their television screens in blissful ignorance, growing fatter, and thinking exactly what the Jewish masters of Hollywood and the networks tell them to think. Well, excuse me. That's not entirely correct. The situation really isn't as static as that makes it seem. The masters of the media are not content with keeping most of the Gentile population in a stupor of ignorance and consumption. They are consumed with the same murderous hatred for our people that inspired the communists, lesbians, and other Jewish radicals to attempt to murder one of our peaceful demonstrators in Washington by beating him over the head with a lug wrench and a skateboard. The media masters and their allies in the government, in the schools, and in the pulpit are pushing hard for speech crime laws in the United States of the same sort which resulted in Hendrik being imprisoned in Germany. And the other side of the situation is that not all of our people are in a brainwashed stupor. More than ever before, the perceptive and independent-minded few are rousing themselves in alarm over the danger which threatens all of us. The danger to Americans is not just that of the loss of our freedom, leaving us, like the Germans, unable to speak out against those who want to destroy us. The danger comes from a whole flood of evils accompanying the campaign against our freedom. The flood of non-white immigrants into the white world, in America, in Australia, in Europe, is causing some to join us. The growing corruption of our courts and our legislatures is rousing others. The all-too-visible examples of South Africa and Rhodesia, visible, that is, to those not totally numbed by the Jewish poison pouring forth from their television screens. These all-too-visible examples of what happens to white nations which succumb to the Jew-inspired, womanish whining of the multiculturalists and the diversity mongers, the whining of, oh, why can't we all just learn to get along together? Why can't we all just love each other, blacks and Asians and mestizos and whites? There's plenty for all of us if we'll just share and be nice to each other. These examples of the descent into rape and disease and murder and squalor and savagery and degradation and racial extinction wherever Jewish propaganda has prevailed are moving others finally to stand with us. What is coming to America will be terrible and bloody. What will happen even to those who have tried desperately to stay out of the fight will be far more painful than what happened to Billy Roper when he was attacked by a Jewish mob in Washington 2 weeks ago. But we can see now the possibility, at least, of light and sanity and health once again after the great bloodletting which is coming. It really is a race now between the Jews and their allies on one side and the awakening few on our side. The few who still have time to prevail against the enemies of our people everywhere if they can find the courage and the willpower to act soon. Thanks for being with me again today.